Blog Talk Radio.
Vermont Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders,
declared his support for the Obama administration's current policy of bombing Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, and opposed, for now, the more aggressive intervention proposed by former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, his main rival for the Democratic presidential nomination. Clinton issued a statement Thursday calling for the unilateral imposition of any American no-fly zone in Syria, directed at both the rudimentary air force of Syrian President Bashar Assad and the Russian warplanes that last week began an airstrike against U.S.-backed Islamic forces fighting the Assad government. He said, "We must be very careful about not making complex and dangerous situation in Syria even worse," Sanders says. "I support President Obama's efforts to combat ISIS in Syria, while at the same time supporting those at the country trying to remove the brutal dictatorship of Bashar Assad." He added, "I oppose all this point of unilateral American no-fly zone in Syria, which could get us more deeply involved in that horrible civil war and lead to a never-ending U.S. entanglement in that region." Indirectly aligning himself with the foreign policy of the White House in the Middle East, Sanders underscored that he is not running as an anti-war candidate or offering any alternative to the policy of increasing military aggression by American imperialism around the world. Yeah, and this article goes on a little bit, but you know, it tells you to watch out for Bernie Sanders, man, because I mean, Bernie is a militarist. He's a Zionist. He's a Democrat. He's not an anti-war Democrat. He's just an anti, you know, whatever Democrat. And I think he's a fake. I think he's like Dean was in 2004. Dean gave up in the primaries, even though he was ahead by all polls. He lost in the primary, and Kerry won, who was the guy who was dead last in the polls. So that was the fix was in on that one, and so that's too bad. But anyway, that's the way it works. They try it once, and then it works. They try it again. How do you get? Even Jim Webb resigned today. I was going to read that article, and he got out of the Democratic race. Says it's all fixed. There was no reason. At least he got his name up there. He got into the first one. But so it goes back and forth. But Sanders is a war hawk, so don't have any love of Sanders. And that is from World Socialist website. Okay, so Sanders is a socialist, so socialists are saying he's a piece of work. Anyway. The Inquisition. As many as 50 million Bible believers tortured and put to death by the Roman Catholic Church. 50 million. Bible believers. Those are people that were Christians that believed in the Bible. And they look at these poor people that were tortured and killed and horribly maimed by this church of the Holy Father and a Holy Franny. Never ending. So the Supreme Court said the other day that mandatory vaccinations don't violate children's constitutional rights. In a controversial move, the Supreme Court of the United States accepted a lower court's ruling effectively declaring that mandatory vaccinations for children do not violate their constitutional rights. This is what Hitler did. Hitler did the same thing in the Nazi Germany. Vaccinated everybody and put stuff on them and kill them. Anyway, U.S. court has refused to hear a case challenging the state of New York's public school vaccination requirement that requires all children to be vaccinated prior to attendance at public school. The SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States' failure to hear the case effectively states that mandatory vaccination of all public school children doesn't violate their constitutional rights. A lower court had ruled that the school vaccination requirement, which three parents had legally challenged after their unvaccinated children were prohibited from attending school, did not violate the constitutional rights of the children. Yeah, all right. But the appeals court also upheld the decision that children exempted from vaccinations due to religious reasons could be prohibited from school attendance in the event of a disease outbreak that is vaccine preventable. Yeah. Well, in a New York case, two students who were not vaccinated on religious grounds were temporarily barred from school after a fellow student was diagnosed with chickenpox. The family of the third student challenged the statute after a judge denied her mother's request for a vaccine exemption, finding that the mother's concerns were primarily health-related and not based on religion. The attorney representing the three New York families have made it clear that this issue is not going to simply go away as the debate over the mandatory vaccines has reached fever pitch across the United States. He says, I'm disappointed, but I think there's more coming, attorney Patricia Finn said. Throughout the country, people are organizing and challenging these statutes. And Finn told the Associated Press by phone, I don't know why the Supreme Court didn't take it. There's far more coming. And she goes on to explain that more. So you might want to go to check that one out. You know, that's at freethoughtproject.com, thefreethoughtproject.com. And let's see. It says here, in attempting to repeal Obamacare, has cost taxpayers $59.4 million. Meanwhile, they've made cuts to Meals on Wheels, school lunches, Head Start, 30,000 teachers, first responders, women's services. Maybe it's time to repeal Republicans. That's true. That was from the Daily Cause. And, you know, this is a man who is he's a New World Order spokesperson, as Zbigniew Brzezinski, also founder of the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations, and one of the leading foreign policy advisors in the world. He's also a Bilderberger. And shortly, he says, the public will be unable to reason or think for themselves. They'll only be able to parrot the information they've been given on the previous night's news. And he said that in 1972. And guess what? He's absolutely right. That's what happened. Barack Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize winner who bombed seven countries. This is our guy. Now, so, this is from Mint Press News. And Barack Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, who's bombed seven countries. The U.S. jets are bombing Syria again this month, part of an overall pattern of military expansion during the Obama administration that's seen military involvements in dozens of conflicts. As the United States renews a Washington campaign, a bombing campaign against ISIS forces in Syria, it seems like America's penchant for waging war knows no bounds. And during the first 7 years of Barack Obama's presidency, the U.S. bombed seven countries while supporting other destabilizing military actions throughout the Middle East. And here is a look at these seven countries and the effects of bombing. Number one is Afghanistan. Despite the announced end of Afghanistan war, significant U.S. military presence in Afghanistan remains. Drones are a frequent presence in Afghan skies. One strike earlier this month killed 12 people, according to Iran's press TV. Iraq. The Obama administration has conducted over 5,000 airstrikes in Iraq and Syria in just the past year. David Lerman reported for Bloomberg Business, despite ongoing U.S. military involvement, terrorism continues to be a deadly presence in Iraq cities. Libya. While the European Union and its allies carried out many of the airstrikes during Libya's civil war, the U.S. was instrumental in destabilizing that country through both military aid and direct support, especially during the lead-up to General Muammar Gaddafi's overthrow in 2011. Now ISIS is also gaining a stronghold here, and the country has been described as a failed state. Pakistan. Drone strikes are also frequent in Pakistan, where the Bureau of Investigative Journalism estimated that only 4% of the victims could be identified as al-Qaeda members. Although drone strikes on Pakistan began under George W. Bush, their frequency has dramatically increased under Obama. And this was reported by Russian TV last year. And the next country is Somalia. Yeah. Remember the Somalian pirates? Yeah. Over 100 U.S. troops have been stationed in Somalia since 2007. Reuters reported last year, in September, the U.S. carried out airstrikes there, apparently killing Ahmed Abdi Godan, leader of the extremist group of Al-Shabaab, which the U.S. claimed was allying with Al-Qaeda. And last but not least, Syria, the U.S. renewed its bombing campaign against ISIS in Syria early this month, with U.S. Warplanes taking off from bases in Turkey. Airstrikes were also used in a failed attempt to defend Division 30. The failed American attempt to train so-called moderate Syrian rebels in Yemen. U.S. cables revealed by the WikiLeaks show that Yemeni officials have allowed airstrikes, which began under George W. Bush, to continue under the Obama administration. And this is a quote, too, by a reporter. It says, U.S. bombing raids in Yemen are also almost solely carried out by drones, and they have been increasing in intensity in recent years. A reporter by Human Rights Watch in 2013 analyzed airstrikes in Yemen carried out since 2009. The organization found that out of the 82 people who died in the airstrikes, 57 were civilians. Amazing, huh? And it says here, and in all that, the U.S. has bombed 14 predominantly Muslim countries since 1980. The death toll from all modern wars in the Middle East may be as high as 4 million dead Muslims and Arabs. Military campaigns have destabilized the Middle East, giving rise to terror groups like ISIS, and allowing for sectarianism to blossom, and necessitating further bombing in what Ron Fullwood, writing for MyMPN, called a perpetual protection racket. Interesting. This little video that goes along with that. How many countries has U.S. bombed under President Obama? 7. All right. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia. Yeah. Syria. Yeah. That's pretty bizarre, you know. Pretty bizarre to watch that, because, yeah, that's what's going on over there. It really is. So let's give the Nobel Prize to a guy who bombed 7 countries since he took office. Jeez. Stephen Hawking said something last week. He came on and said, Stephen Hawking says, we should really be scared of capitalism, not robots. According to famous physicist Stephen Hawking, the rising use of automated machines may mean the end of human rights, not just jobs. But he's not talking... He's not talking about robots with artificial intelligence taking over the world. He's talking about the current capitalist political system and its major players. On Reddit, Hawking said that the economic gap between the rich and the poor will continue to grow as more jobs are automated by machines and the owners of said machines hoard them to create more wealth for themselves. Someone asks, have you thought about the possibility of technological unemployment, where we develop automated processes that ultimately cause large unemployment by performing jobs faster and on a cheaper than people can perform them? In particular, do you foresee a world where people would work less because so much work is automated? Do you think people will always either find work or manufacture more work to be done? Hawkins replied, if machines produce everything we need, the outcome will depend on how things are distributed. Everyone can enjoy a life of luxurious leisure if the machine-produced wealth is shared, or most people can end up miserably poor if the machine owners successfully lobby against wealth redistribution. So far, the trend seems to be toward the second option, but technically driven ever-increasing inequality. And it says, the insatiable thirst for capitalist accumulation bestowed upon humans by years of lies and terrible economic policy has affected technology in such a way that not one of its major goals has become to replace human jobs. If we do not take this warning seriously, we may face unfathomable corporate domination. If we let the same people who buy and sell our political system and resources maintain control of automated technology, then we'll be heading towards a very harsh reality. Yeah, that's for sure. So anyway, there's a couple of warnings there from Stephen Hawking, and brilliant man. I have a little insert here today about cannabis. The benefits that they found now, they've always known, but they found them again. They're publishing them, rather. And with proven studies. This is from PreventDisease.com, and it says, cannabis stops cancer growth, reduces neurological impairment, relaxes muscles, antispasmodic, prevents migraines, treats glaucoma, treats ADD and ADHD, reduces IBS Crohn's disease, cures epilepsy, prevents Alzheimer's, treats PMS, antipsychotic, makes biodegradable plastic, makes paper, makes fuel, solvents, lubricants, makes industrial textiles, makes consumer textiles, makes building materials, could end deforestation, could end dependence on oil, gas, and coal, can be grown almost anywhere. still wondering why it's illegal? Yeah. You ever wonder why it's illegal, folks? Because it's a gift from God. It's a God-given gift to mankind. And they don't want man to have it. Or it'll make them happy, it'll make them healthy, it'll make them wealthy, and it'll make them wise. And they can't have that. You have to be stupid, and you have to be brutalized, and you have to hurt, and you have to have pain, and you have to be sublimated and dominated. You know? Yeah. That's the way they want you to be. Proving its commitment to planetary destruction, House votes to lift oil export ban. Despite warnings from environmental groups and President Barack Obama's explicit pledge to veto any such measure, the Republican-led House of Representatives proving commitment to climate change chaos, GOP votes to lift oil export ban. But the White House is expected to veto the fossil fuel bill. And despite warnings from environmental groups and President Barack Obama's explicit pledge to veto any such measure, the Republican-led House of Representatives on Friday passed a bill lifting the nation's 40-year oil export ban. The advocacy group Oil Change International Excuse me, folks, I'm trying to... I don't know what is playing here. I have to find out.
Can only be captured really bad for fentanyl.
I have no idea. No idea whatsoever. Sorry. Okay. So, like I said, your common dreams, approving commitment to climate chaos. GOP votes to lift oil ban, but of course they're gonna veto it. But the advocacy group, Oil Change International, had previously declared that repealing the ban would accelerate oil drilling in the U.S. and increase climate emissions while ramping up dangerous oil transportation via rail and pipeline through towns across the country. While Sierra Club executive our director, Michael Bruin, warned that lifting the ban would have disastrous consequences for the environment and for America's clean energy economy. Instead of exporting pollution and good jobs to other countries, the U.S. should concentrate on leading the world in exporting clean energy technologies.
What can get you feeling this kind of confident? Getting a new Honda Accord for just $189 a month at your Connecticut Honda dealer. So why settle for less than a Honda? Click to get the confidence of the best overall brand. And tell a friend.
I don't know why that was on. I don't know what video that was coming from. I'm sorry. Here we go.
Jared Goff just threw another interception.
Heisman Hopefuls presented by Aflac. In just one day, we process, approve, and pay.
I'm sorry, that's why we shouldn't work a lot on these computers.
I'm Matt Leinart, and I'm sorry, Cal fans. Jared Goff has eliminated himself from my ranking. I really thought Jared Goff could catapult himself into the top of these rankings with a great performance against Utah, but instead he throws five.
Sorry, folks, hang on one second. I'm trying to get out of here.
Unfortunately for Jared Goff and his football team, the schedule only gets harder. But trending up in my rankings, Utah running back Devontae Booker, he capitalized on this opportunity against the Cal Bears, rushing 34 times for 200.
God. I'm sorry, folks. I couldn't kill this video where I was coming from. I still couldn't find it. coming from somewhere. But so I'm sorry, I kind of messed up here, and I wanted to get back to what we were doing, and that wasn't working for some reason. So let me go back to it, and hopefully. Hey, did I tell you that Jim Webb dropped? No, I think I did. Jim Webb dropped out of the debates. I'll if I can get this up, if I can play it.
I fully accept that my views on many issues are not compatible with the power structure and the nominating base of the Democratic Party.
I want you to hear this again because this is Jim Webb saying that he's dropping out of the Democratic race. He's not saying that he's not going to be an independent. He's just saying he doesn't want to be a Democrat, so because he doesn't believe in what they believe in. So let's move.
I fully accept that my views on many issues are not compatible with the power structure and the nominating base of the Democratic Party. That party is filled with millions of dedicated, hardworking Americans, but its hierarchy is not comfortable with many of the policies that I have laid forth, and frankly, I'm not that comfortable with many of theirs. For this reason, I'm withdrawing from any consideration of being the Democratic Party's nominee for the presidency. How I remain as a voice will depend on what kind of support I'm shown in the coming weeks as I meet with people from all sides of America's political landscape, and I intend to do that. I hold strong views about where our country needs to go. I will never change those views in order to adopt to some party platform as a way of getting nominated. So here we are. I'm stepping aside from the Democratic primary process, but I will never abandon my loyalties to the people who do the hard daily work of keeping this country great at home and secure abroad, and we'll just have to see what happens next.
Excuse me for 1 second here. I'm just trying to figure out how to get out of here. Let's see if I can figure this one out. What I wanted to talk to you about tonight, of course, was the world. This is a world update. I mean, I'm looking at a whole bunch of real news. And from all over the world, and I just want to, I want to emphasize that this is kind of what we do, And there's a site that I recommend everybody go to. It's called Activism News, and it's a very good site, and. What can I say? It's kind of like it's everything an activist would want to know. Not want, maybe not, but there's a lot in it, and I like to use it every so often. There's some news, and so. Activism pictures, videos, breaking news. Here's something that this is about the electronic from the electronic infantata intifada, rather. I'm sorry, which is a website that shows Palestinian activism and people in Palestine activists that are trying to take back their country. Some of these articles are very much, I'm not saying this hasn't been kept up to them. Electronic infantata, but let me just see. Well, anyway, in June, sunbathing at the crime scene, the Israeli resort that covers up the massacre. This is interesting. Activists carry placards reading the names of the Tantura massacre's known victims. There are a few crews today at the site of the single worst massacre committed by the Israeli army during the 1948 war that established a Jewish state on the ruins of the Palestinians' homeland. For Palestinians, Tantura, the name of a coastal village south of Haifa, that was once home to 1,700 inhabitants, has become a byword for the darkest episode of the Nakba, Arabic for catastrophe, the ethnic cleansing of 1948. For Israelis, the site is referred to by a different name, D-O-R, Dor, known as a popular beach resort belonging to two neighboring kibbutzes, Dor and Nasholim, an hour's drive from north of Tel Aviv. In May, some 300 activists met in the resort car park in an attempt to end the long-enforced silence about Tantura in Israelis' collective memory. Precisely 67 years after the massacre, they staged the first-ever commemoration at that site. They laid wreaths in the car park, marking the mass graves in the village cemetery, where more than 200 Palestinians were hurriedly interred after they had been executed on the 22nd of May 1948 as Zionist forces swept up the Mediterranean coast. Some 130 small placards were held aloft, each bearing the name of a victim the organizers had been able to identify. Then the group held a short procession past baffled Israeli holidaymakers, sunbathing, building sandcastles, and barbecuing, through an area where Tantrum's 250 homes once stood. The march finished at the beach, where in 1948 many of the villagers had been interrogated before being put to death. Yeah. Quest for justice. There are few signs today of the original village to disturb Israelis' revelries. A Hebrew language sign admits vaguely that a small dome shrine amid the shalat is a chalet, is the ancient grave of a sheikh. An impressive large stone structure on the beach front, once a prominent Tantra home, according to the village's refugees, is simply marked entry forbidden. And the organizers hope to use the commemoration to increase pressure on the Israeli authorities to allow Israel's Palestinian minority to erect a permanent memorial at the site of the victims. By contrast, a monument has stood for decades a short distance away on the main coastal highway, listing the names of 13 Zionist fighters who were reported to have died in the attack on Tantura. This massacre has been kept out of Israelis' consciousness for far too long, said Hazar Abu Raya, one of the organizers. It's time for that to change. This is a first step in our quest for justice for the families. Basel Gattas, a Palestinian member of Israel's parliament, the Knesset, who took part, said the commemoration was an important milestone. He mentioned a famous quotation often attributed to David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, and that the old will die and the young will forget. The old will die and the young will forget. And boy, is that so true. All right. Ben-Gurion has proved wrong, said Gattas. The third generation after the Navka refused to forget. They demand a right of return and have intensified the struggle to keep the memory of the Navka alive. The event was the first joint venture between Filastiniviat of grassroots Palestinian rights movement and the Association for the Defense of the Rights of the Internally Displaced People in Israel. Both are organizations representing Israel's 1.5 million strong Palestinian minority, a fifth of the state's population. Government populations figures put Palestinians in Israel at 1.7 million, but this includes Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem, most of whom don't have Israeli citizenship. A handful of now elderly survivors from Tantura, who as children were spared death, were among those attending, and many had fled or been put on trucks by the soldiers to be transported to the Palestinian village of Freudis close by. And it's really, really sad. Yeah. This is a very long article, and I'm going to refer you to it because I'll spend the rest of the night reading it. But it's a very good article. It should be read and it should be known. And this is from the Electronic Intifada, all right? And it's called Sunbathing at the Crime Scene, Israeli Resort that Covers Up a Massacre. And it was written by Jonathan Cook on June 3rd, 2015. So, I thought you should know. Might be a good idea to know what really goes on over there. Right? Yeah, right. Okay. So, anyway, let us go beyond this to a greater place here. This is an interesting group. It's called Earth Tribe, Environmental and Social Activist News. Takes forever to bring these guys up, though. Wow. That's one thing I've noticed. A lot of these, they either their servers are slow or they have they have a lot of pictures. They got tons and tons of pictures on this one. Yeah. Activist News. I'm kind of not sure where to go, what to do, or what to read. There's so many. Global tree census highlights need to restore forests. Drought's becoming the new normal for Californians. Too warm, too few fish. Health warnings for world's oceans. This is frightening. This was something that was written back August 29th. So, and let's see. Oh, okay, they don't have that one for some reason. It's taken down. And Canadians pull the plug on renewable energy scheme. See what they're saying here. Canadian province cancels a successful project which rewarded people for generating renewable energy, writes Alex Kirby. The Canadian province of Nova Scotia on the country's Atlantic seaboard has ended a program which gave citizens an incentive to produce renewable energy. The decision, which will initially mean lower prices for energy users, is at odds with the widespread warnings that renewable energy will rapidly replace fossil fuels. Excuse me. One Nova Scotian told the Climate News Network that the government's decision was a backward step. They have not only cut the legs out from under independent energy developers, they have stolen the citizens' right to access ownership of energy. The scheme is the Nova Scotia Community Feed-in Tariff, which is designed to encourage community-based local renewable energy products by guaranteeing a rate per kilowatt hour for the energy and the product fed into the province's electrical grid. Well, these guys aren't doing it. They stopped making them do that. And on August 6th, the provincial government announced that this is the right time to bring COMFIT to a close. It has achieved its objectives, and we are now at a point where the program could begin to have a negative impact on our power rates. Oh, sure. And Nova Scotians have told us that they want stability and affordability when it comes to power rates, and industry wants clarity on the future of the COMFIT program. Well, the thing was working great. Everybody's getting rebates and all kinds of stuff. Then all of a sudden, now they stopped it. Now they're back to the same practice as before. So it's crazy, you know. So hopefully their new, Canada's new Prime Minister will make sense to somebody there. And as I warned you, we're having I wanted to discuss tonight the environment and everything else, but this particular thing is, we've seen it addressed in a lot of places and it's constantly, but a warming planet heightens the plight of the bumblebee. And I don't know. I don't swat them away anymore when I see them because I don't want to upset their pollination. But the role bumblebees play as plant pollinators is vital to providing a food for humans and wildlife. And scientists warn that human intervention may be needed to protect these as climate change overheats their southern habitat range, writes Tim Radford. The humble bumblebee is feeling the squeeze from climate change, and research shows that its southern range is being reduced as the planet warms. And yet it seems to grow no sign of migrating northwards for safety. This unwillingness to head for cooler climes could prove disastrous and have prompted some scientists to suggest that the humans may need to intervene by creating refuges. Yeah, I guess that sounds right. Yeah, and let's see. I just lost my place here. I hate it when I do that. I hate it when I lost my voices. I need to intervene today. Yeah, but this was a generated database. Wow. Hey, Jerry Kerr, a biologist at the University of Ottawa, Canada, and colleagues report in the Journal of Science that they generated a database of 423,000 local observations of 36 European and 31 North American species. Yeah, of the genus Bombus, and mapped the patterns of change. They found that in recent increasing warmer decades, bumblebees tended to disappear from the southernmost and hottest part of their range, but did not shift north. And in some cases, the insect's range had shrunk by as much as 300 kilometers. And the dramatic losses. Global warming has trapped bumblebee species in a kind of climate vice, Professor Kerr says. And the result is dramatic loss of bumblebee species from the hottest areas across two continents. For example, for species that evolved under cool conditions like bumblebees, global warming might be the kind of threat that causes many of them to disappear for good. But unlike so many other species, bumblebees generally haven't expanded into more northern areas. We may need to help these species establish new colonies to the north at continental scales. And man, that's amazing. So entire continents will have to be readjusted for bees. It's just wow. That's it's kind of a frightening possibility to see that. Oh, you know, I wanted to mention, because there's not a whole lot of news talked about anymore, and that's on the Fukushima, you know, and I don't really even want to show this because I thought I did, but this was on December 4th, 2013. Fears are growing over the Fukushima nuclear disaster cleanup and how the operations could go horribly wrong, affecting Japan and large areas of the Northern Hemisphere. This video is the latest in a wave of videos and alarming stories that are cropping up in the media. Part of the problem with this disaster are the mixed signals being given by the Japanese government and other governments around the world, and a number of experts who have been warning of the potential dangers. Take 10 minutes to look at this video and try to make your own mind up as to whether there should be serious cause for concern, and whether an international response to help with the cleanup is needed. Well, this was 2 years ago, and when this came out, and I can tell you it was needed, but it wasn't given, and things are now even worse. For NGOs, activist news here, non-government organizations, focused on the environment by no means covers all the groups around the world looking for change. We will be adding more organizations in due course. Some of the NGOs are the Earth Day Network, coordinating worldwide events for Earth Day and beyond. Friends of the Earth, an NGO that focuses on the environment, the economics of sustainable growth. And three, a non-government organization, Earth First, Newswire, provide news and information about direct action and defense of living systems in the natural world. Environmental defense, number four, defending and restoring biodiversity. Earth 911, deep green resistance. Greenpeace International, Earth Times, Sierra Club, Environmental News Network, environmental defense. Environmental defense, they want to have four goals: stabilizing the Earth's climate, safeguarding the world's oceans, protecting human health, defending and restoring biodiversity. Worldwide Fund International, the world's largest and most experienced independent conservation organization, with around 5 million supporters and a global network of 27 national organizations, 5 associates, and 21 program offices. It's a big company, huh? Climate Arc performs full text searches of educational and activist websites, also includes an archive of popular media and environmental group information on climate change and other environmental topics. So, United Nations, Environment Conservation International, National Audubon Society, Nature Conservatory, Clean Up Australia, Alliance to Save Energy, National Wildlife Federation, Nature.com, a great resource on the world science and medicine. I looked that one up. Union of Concerned Scientists, Office of Wetlands, Rainforest Action Network, One World, Audubon Institute, Earth Watch, World Watch, and Ecology Fund, the Rainforest Site, Tree Hugger, Climate Institute, Save Our Environment. Jeez, they just get tons. It goes on here. You got over 100 of them. So, about 100 of them. Scorecard combines data from over 200 different U.S. state and federal databases to profile long environmental programs and the health effects of pollution. So, anyway, our show is done for tonight, and I want to thank everybody who joined me. And, again, I wanted to give a broader view of our news coverage lately and do a world update, because I do have an international audience, and, we try to engage, people from Europe and Asia and Africa and all who are listening to activism news and who are maybe get inspired by this show to be one yourself. And so with that, I'll bid you good evening, and I want to thank everybody who joined me. And join me here tomorrow night when we do the union news, okay, and issues. So good night, everybody.